Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We have a busy show today. We're going to hear from Devin Connolly, the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Columbia and Greene County's Communications Manager, about upcoming events they are planning to help you with your plants and land. We'll also hear from WGXC's Mayuka Fujina, speaking with Laura Canamella, a birder and artist based in Columbia County. And we'll hear the Master Gardeners of Columbia Greene Cornell Cooperative Extension from their Nature Calls podcast talk about the Merlin Bird Identification app developed by Cornell University. And retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson will talk about the rain we've been getting this week. And it all starts in just a moment. After Jason Martin's song ends, it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Hi, we are
Sam,
Katie,
and Michaela from Castleton, and you are listening to
WGXC Acra
on 90.7 FM. Keep on smiling.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Randall and Bernadette Martin of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, June 27th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. June 27th is the final date of voting in local primary elections this month. In Greene County, there is only one primary election. Republicans in New Baltimore decide between two candidates for highway supervisor, Robert P. Van Etten and Alan W. Van Warmer. In Columbia County, the Chatham Future Party has an uncontested primary in the northern Columbia County town. In New Lebanon, Republicans choose between Peter McCagg and Jeffrey Weinstock for highway superintendent. And there are also Democratic primary elections in all five City of Hudson wards. Lauren Stanforth reports in the Times Union that New York's Department of Environmental Conservation is warning that smoke from Canadian wildfires might return to our area on June 28th. Winds from a cold front moving into the area June 28th may bring thick surface smoke to the area from the Canadian wildfires. Governor Kathy Hochul released a statement on June 26th that said, quote, "As we closely monitor the changing forecast, New Yorkers could be prepared for the potential return of smoke from the Canadian wildfires. I encourage everyone to remain vigilant, especially if you are vulnerable to air pollution. Stay up to date on the latest information and take steps to protect yourself, unquote. The weather forecast could change and winds could shift. The Departments of Environmental Conservation and Health said they will wait until June 27th to issue any air quality health advisories, if necessary, for June 28th. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Ashley Hoeffel reports in the Daily Gazette that New York Senator Chuck Schumer announced New York State will receive $664,618,251 in federal funding for high-speed broadband services through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. A 2021 report conducted by the State Department of Education found that 31% of households in rural areas do not have broadband, compared to 26% of households in metropolitan areas. In Gloversville on June 26, Schumer said, quote, "We all know that broadband is essential the way electricity or water has been essential for hundreds of years. In the 1930s, former President Franklin D. Roosevelt said every home should have electricity. We're saying every home should have broadband, and this money goes a long way to making that happen in New York State. The pandemic showed us how much we needed work for it, whether it came to telemedicine or to educate. Broadband is no longer a luxury, it's a necessity," unquote. An audit released last month by State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli found that broadband subscription services rose from 64% to 76% between 2019 and 2021 after similar federal funding from the Emergency Broadband Benefit Program and the Affordable Connectivity Program. Governor Kathy Hochul said, quote, "This transformative investment in New York's Connect All program will be a game changer in advancing our statewide strategy to make affordable high-speed internet available to all," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, June 27th. Local early morning temperatures range from 59 degrees in Tannersville to 64 in New Scotland. Regional average soil temperature is 67 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be bottomed out. You can give those air purifiers a break while the AC takes over. Today will be muggy. Dew points at 69 will be oppressive for some. Rain chances are up all day, getting stronger this afternoon with another round of random storm cells rolling through. A high of 79 happens at 6 p.m. Overnight temps fall to 66 degrees. Dew points follow along, keeping it very muggy. Tomorrow will be similar with more rain predicted and a high of 77. Overnight, a drop to 60 degrees leads into a hot and muggy Thursday with a high of 84 and a lowered chance for afternoon thunderstorms. Friday, hot, 85, more summer standard afternoon random thunderstorms. So far, the weekend is still looking wet but cooler. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 4:53 a.m., high tide at 9:58 a.m., low tide again at 5:05 p.m., and high tide once again at 10:54 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 8:21 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:18 a.m. Looking way up, we see we have 10% chance of X-class flares, 40% for the less destructive but still annoying M-class flares. If you can hear static over my voice, that is likely why. It's a cranky sun. Plasma winds will be average at 501 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, with fair conditions below 60 megahertz overnight. Yes, we do seem to be stuck in a pattern. There are no chances of aurora tonight, and the current sunspot number is 158. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a emergency to exist.
next, we're going to hear from the Master Gardeners at the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a podcast called Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. And each week on WGXC, we'll hear different segments from the show focused on local gardening and gardening for the time of year it is.
Hi, and welcome to Tools of the Trade, a recurring segment of this podcast that highlights a website, app, or book that we, Master Gardeners, find to be an essential resource. I'm Joan Satterley, a Master Gardener volunteer with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. If you're like me, you often find yourself out in the garden when a beautiful or interesting bird flies by or lands on a nearby tree. And you say to yourself, what's that bird? Well, you can run into the house and fetch your favorite field guide, or you can do like thousands of bird lovers do and pull out your smartphone to check the amazing Merlin Bird Identification app. There are actually quite a few bird ID apps out there, but many require a paid subscription. Merlin is not only free, but is also, I think, the easiest to use, and it has the best data backing up results. Developed by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, Merlin was launched in 2014 to answer the question for users, what's that bird? The creators realized that searching through a massive field guide or figuring what to plug into a search engine was a challenging and sometimes intimidating way to identify birds, especially for beginners. While the Merlin staff is based in the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, the team includes 5,000 plus birders spanning the globe who have contributed photos and auto recordings from more than 800 million sightings to the eBird database. Once you've downloaded the app onto your smartphone, it's easy to get started identifying your feathered friends. If you used Merlin in the past, you know that it asks you a few simple questions about the bird you've sighted. First, and probably most importantly, Merlin asks you where and when you saw the bird. Merlin defaults to the day of your sighting and saves past destinations, so this part is easy. It then asks the size of the bird you saw, with examples of common birds like robins and crows. Once you've selected the size, Merlin asks for the main colors of the bird, and here you can select up to three colors. So the bird you saw may be gray, green, and yellow. Finally, Merlin asks you to choose from a number of activities that the bird may have been doing when you saw it, like eating at a feeder, sitting in a tree, or wading in water. Once you've answered these questions, Merlin presents a short list of possible species with photos and brief descriptions. If you haven't used Merlin for a while, you might not know that the folks at Cornell Lab have added even more tools to identify and learn about the birds in your world. Merlin now also includes photo and sound identification features. Like other photo identification apps, Merlin utilizes recent vision and machine learning advances, but it also leverages the use database of images from Cornell's Macaulay Library. So with the photo ID feature, you can either take a new photo of a bird or use one you've already taken to identify the bird you saw. Another amazing new feature is Merlin's sound ID. If you're wondering not which bird I'm seeing, but what bird I am hearing, Merlin can help. Just hold out your phone, tap record, and you'll get suggestions in real time, along with recordings or suggested species you can compare to what you're hearing. If that's not enough, Merlin also allows you to save the birds you've identified, making it easier to start a life list. And if you want to learn more about birds in your area, just tap the Explore Birds button and you'll get photos, descriptions, and sounds of birds likely to be seen in your area at the time of year you're looking. In short, Merlin has made it fun and easy to learn about birds near you. So get out there and start looking and listening. You're likely to learn something new. That's it for this edition of Tools of the Trade. Until next time, I'm Joan Satterley.
That was an excerpt of an interview from the Nature Calls Conversations from the Hudson Valley podcast from the Master Gardeners of the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Columbia and Greene Counties. You can hear the full episode at the Cornell Cooperative Extension webpage or in the WGXC archives at wgxc.org or at ccecolumbiagreene.org. Next, we hear from WGXC's Mayuka Fujino from her Bequency Show, where she talks to and records local birds and bird experts.
Hi, I'm Laura Canamella. I'm an artist living in Columbia County, and I currently have a show at the Hammond Museum,
which is where we are right now.
Which is where we are in North Salem, New York. They have a wonderful stroll garden that's attached to the museum, part of the museum.
So the Japanese garden.
So there's waterfall nearby and birds flying by and calling as we sit here and talk.
So your pieces are in the show right now, and could you tell us a little bit about what the show is about?
Oh, okay. The show is called Chie, A Thousand Layers. I work in paper, and I work cutting through many layers of paper to make relief-like sculpture that suggests, some of them suggest illustrations from the Tale of Genji. It's a very important Japanese literary
a novel written like a couple of thousand years ago.
Yes, the first novel ever written.
And it was written by a woman.
Yeah, Murasaki Shikibu, so they say. Yeah, so there is a tradition of illustrating the chapters of that novel. And when I went to Japan, I went into a Japanese paper store and bought a lot of paper to bring home. So I was trying to figure out what to do with all this paper. And I had been doing artwork, made out of or in reference to Persian miniatures and Tibetan paintings. So it kind of seemed to make sense to look to the Tale of Genji for inspiration. So I did. And they include a lot of the Japanese paper that I brought back from Japan. I built up many, many layers and also used the technique that they incorporated into paintings of that time, of the Heian era, when the novel was written. So they had a technique called Fukinuki Yatai, and that is almost like looking down through clouds into a building where the roof has been blown off. And so you can see what's inside these the rooms and the divisions, the screens, and then also the porches and then the landscape around too. And so I was really interested in that view. So a lot of the pieces show that view of looking down through the clouds and into these wonderful, intricate, very, very small, beautiful spaces. And so from there, I actually started to imagine how I could turn the clouds into sculpture, and they became many, many, many layered, very high relief sculptures that suggested waterfalls and geology and gorges and lots of the very dramatic landscape places that I was looking at. I live very close to a gorge in Volusia, New York, in Columbia County. And I draw a lot of inspiration from the rocks and the waterfalls that run right through the town there. And then my most recent work, which is also, there's about 70, I think there's 73 pieces in this show. My most recent works are very small, 12-layered Junihito. They call it in Japan. Junihito is the name that they give the very formal kimono that they wore in Heian times. So sometimes the Empress today will wear it in a very formal occasion. And it's made out of 12 layers of fabric, and choosing the colors, choosing the palette was always a very important thing for women that were wearing these in Heian times. So I decided to limit myself, rather than doing thousands of layers for these specific pieces, to limit myself to 12, and choosing a color palette suggested maybe a seasonal time of the landscape that I was being influenced by, or the time of day of cloud formations. So they're very small pieces, and they're, again, suggest different seasons, different times of day, depending on what design I was choosing to do.
I kind of find it interesting, as a Japanese person, some of the perspective, like the, you said, fukinuki yatai.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I had to ask you to explain that word to me, even though that composition is very common in Japanese art. So when I see it, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I didn't know the name of it.
Yes.
But so these familiar, very Japanese components, to see those ideas sort of transformed into like a natural element that is here in the Hudson Valley, and that's around you in your immediate surroundings, and it's part of your life, like the creek and the rocks that you were talking about.
Yeah. Well, actually, the road layers down the striations on the rocks, or the, I mean, even to look at a topographical map to imagine how, you know, a glacier had moved through, or, you know, or how the river had carved the gorge after the glacier, and that kind of layering that happens in nature, then to also transfer that into my process was very important as all of these were being made. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I've been thinking about like how when we're hanging out, I mean, Laura and I, we go to bird walks together, and that's how we get to know each other. I just find it really comforting to be with people who are trying to understand other. In the birding's case, it's birds. They're really serious about learning about others. Mm-hmm. It just gives me a sense of comfort to be with people like that.
And yes. I think it's also good because it makes you more aware of your environment, how your environment is, you know, either welcoming or not for another species, a bird, you know, and we're learning a lot about how the earth is changing, and watching and recording bird habitats, and, you know, are they nesting here? When did they come through? When did the warblers begin? You know, what time of year? And is the food that they're relying on to eat actually now, you know, ripe at the time that they're coming through? Are they coming through too early or too late? Or, you know, what's happening to the environment? I think learning about that other species and how the world is affecting it makes you more sensitive to the environment, and and as humans we're doing to what we can do to make it better for other species.
So it's kind of nice to see that similar approach in your art making too. I mean, you're learning Japanese.
I am trying to learn Japanese. Yes. And I've learned a bit about Japanese paper, and I want to learn more about it as I use it for my media. But I think, yes, learning a lot about the novel and about the illustrations, about the way those ways, rather than, you know, say a more Western linear perspective. Mm-hmm. This is a totally different perspective that, you know, through the clouds and down, and it surely has affected how I think about topography and landscape. It's definitely changed my own perspective quite a bit.
when I go out and walk with you, you seem to be like really attentive of the bird songs and calls. Like you're often the first one to point out.
Not me.
I was like one of the first people to point out.
I don't know. There's a lot more experienced birders in that group than I am.
Hardcore people.
They are great. I have learned so much from them. That's really the way to learn is to go with people who really. Mm-hmm. Who really know, you know, what to listen for, where to walk. Bird songs I really didn't know before I started going out with this group. Yeah.
That's what really made me think of the similarity between us learning about other people's culture and birding. Because, like, literally people listen to, like, cassette tapes on their car.
They do. They do.
When you learn English.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I have a very, like, basic, my name is Mayuko. Like, this is a pen. And, like, you listen to that over and over and over again. And when you actually go into conversation, nobody ever said, this is a pen to me. Like, there's always a little variation of what's in a cassette tape.
Right.
And so when I don't have cassette tape, but I have CDs of bird calls try to listen to it in a car. But when you go in the field and listen to the birds, they say it a little differently.
They do. So, they do.
Just like so the learning the language.
Yeah, yeah. The Merlin app gives you, you know, you can, or, you know, if you, through any of them, you know, if you try to identify some of the sounds,
right.
They usually give you a few different ones.
Right.
So the variation. But some of the birds, they have so many different calls, you know?
Some people can, like, really tell sounds apart, even when it's all, when they're singing all at once, and I may be able to hear, like, robin right here, but I wouldn't be able to catch, like, a waxwing behind several layers of other singing. But experienced birders can catch that.
They can, yeah.
And I'm just, like, amazed, and, like, how do they do that? Like, you really have to train your ears to do that. And so sometimes I feel discouraged, like, will I ever remember, like, any of the songs? But then I remind myself, well, this is what English sounded like when I came to the United States 13 years ago, that I could not tell a word from another word in one conversation.
Yeah.
And it just all blurred to me.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where I am with the bird songs.
Yeah. I feel like with birds, there are seasonal and it doesn't seem like there's so many birds that would be in any given time in your area.
Mm.
So that if you really study and you know what would be here seasonally, what would be here all year round, and you focus on those, you know, and when you know that the red-eyed vireo is going to be coming in, well, then let me learn that song because all summer you're going to be hearing that. So that's a good one to identify and learn this summer. And then, you know, again, it's hard because so many start singing in the spring all at once and things have been quieter and then all of a sudden. But I think early spring is really good to begin to start, you know, because the early ones will start and you learn them. And then even though I learned a lot last year, I needed a refresher before this spring to remember, oh yeah, you know. And even this house wren, I learned that last summer, but when I heard it for the first time, I was like, okay, I know that bird. I've heard that bird. It's very repetitive and very identifiable. But I had to remember which one it was. So Merlin comes in handy for that. And the other thing I found is, like, if you walk around and you, you know, have identified the birds in your area, and then you can kind of use Merlin to check if you're right, you know? So, like, okay, I know it's house wren. Let me see if Merlin will confirm that for me, you know, that I was right. And that's really helpful to do that.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st Congressional Districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Nick Reisman at New York State of Politics reports that crime and public safety continue to be Republican campaign issues. Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, said last week, and I quote, "We're working on that, but we've made great strides," end quote. Really, Democrats have done two things on the crime issue recently. They've made some changes to the bail laws, including a provision granting judges more discretion in setting bail in a wider array of cases. And legislators just passed the Clean Slate Act that would seal an estimated 2 million criminal records. Hochul has not said yet whether she will sign that bill. But she seemed to hint she would, saying, and I quote, "This is driven by the business community at a time of great worker shortages, but we're going to have a lot of safeguards in place," end quote. Republicans, such as Assemblyperson Mike Riley, said, and I quote, "It seems like we give those who are criminals and those who are incarcerated more rights than the victims that they assault, that they murder," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Representative Elise Stefanik, a Republican who represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, released a statement June 20th after the Justice Department announced Hunter Biden, President Joe Biden's son, with federal tax and weapons offenses. Stefanik said, and I quote, "This is the epitome of the politicalization and weaponization of Joe Biden's Department of Justice as they give a slap on the wrist to President Biden's son. A tax fraud and corrupt pay-to-play criminal. It's never been more clear that we have a two-tiered system of justice," end quote. The other Hudson Valley Republican Representative Mark Molinaro did not release a statement about Biden, but continued to clamor for the censure of California Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, though Molinaro has not said why exactly Schiff deserves censure.
Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that Republican Mark Molinaro flipped his vote to table a measure to censure Democrat Representative Adam Schiff. Both local Republicans, Molinaro and Elise Stefanik, sided with censuring Schiff for criticizing former President Donald Trump, while local Democrats Pat Ryan and Paul Tonko voted against. The vote to table the censure measure failed 208 to 218 on June 21st. Schiff, a California-based Democrat, became the 25th House lawmaker to be censured. Republicans did not like comments he made several years ago about investigations into Trump's ties to Russia. Molinaro did not say exactly why he voted to censure Schiff in a statement, saying, quote, "Adam Schiff dishonored himself in our nation. When Nancy Pelosi was speaker, I was disgusted that she punished Republicans without due process," unquote. Ryan was clear about his vote against censure, saying, quote, "My constituents in the Hudson Valley sent me here to focus on delivering relief and defending fundamental rights. Instead, MAGA extremists are holding up Congress for multiple weeks, voting on hyperpartisan resolutions rather than addressing the surge in gun violence, protecting women's reproductive freedom, or combating inflation," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. John L. Dorman reports for Business Insider that Representative Elise Stefanik, the Republican who represents Rensselaer County and the rest of the 21st Congressional District, now wants to expunge the impeachments of former President Donald Trump. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he is in favor of the effort, but has not said when, specifically, he would bring a vote to the floor. Jonathan Turley, a professor at George Washington University Law School, told Reuters Stefanik is making up something that does not exist in the U.S. Constitution. He said, quote, "It is not like a constitutional DUI. Once you are impeached, you are impeached," unquote. Read more about this story in Business Insider.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to wgxc.org for more information.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Now joining us once again is retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson for our weekly discussion of weather and climate. Welcome back, Hugh.
How you doing there, Sabria?
Well, okay, except I think I'm growing mushrooms between my toes. I guess we're finally in thunderstorm season. Now might be a good time to review lightning safety rules. I remember last year that three people were struck and killed underneath a tree near the White House. Why would that happen?
Well, it happens because trees are not a safe place to be. In fact, we're getting a thunderstorm as I do this show right now. So if you hear some crackling, that's what it'll be. Lightning is very powerful. It's got up to 30,000 amps. Each strike of lightning, up to 30,000 amps. So a lot of juice. The problem with the tree is that the electrical current passes through the tree. It's not grounded. It just passes through like water. So if you're under a tree, that lightning, it can come right down that tree and right to you. So a tree is not a good place to be. What you want to do in a thunderstorm, the best place is when you hear thunder roar, you get indoors. You can't emphasize that enough. Now, if you're not indoors, your car is a distant second safe factor. Why is a car different? Because it's made of metal. I'm not talking about convertibles. So if you make a car of metal, that is grounded. The current goes around the car and actually prevents it from coming into the car as long as the windows are shut. So a car is relatively safe, although you're better off in a building. And anyway, obviously, if it's a really bad storm, stay away from windows and things like that. But really important to get indoors. That's why golf courses now, I know the one near me, actually has shelters that you can go to if you get caught in the storm while you're out on the golf course. You can have a shot at getting into that before lightning strikes. And a couple of things about lightning. There's negative and positive strikes. I know we talked about this another time, but I'm going to bring it up again because the most 90% of lightning is the negative strikes, which just basically means you got negative charges in the cloud and positive on the ground. And they're generally, what I'm hearing right now is negative ones, where typical, not too loud. They can still hurt you, but the real killers are the positive strikes, 10%. And those are the ones that form higher up in the anvil. They come from a positive electrons and reach down to the ground. And those are the ones that go up to 25 miles from the thunderstorm. So if you start hearing thunder, you got to assume that there could be a positive strike or two floating around. And that's why you say, oh, I'm going to wait till it rains. Don't do that. As soon as you hear thunder, you are at the you have the possibility of getting struck. And a lot of people get struck before or after the core of the thunderstorm.
So, Hugh, you mentioned a few safety measures there, like getting indoors right away or using your car as the next best option since the path of the current goes around the metal vehicle. My question is now about some different safety measures inside the house. For example, is it really necessary to unplug computers and other electronics, even if they are using surge protectors?
Yeah, if they're using surge protectors, I mean, okay, I have a Mac, so I'm not usually connected. I'm usually on battery, so I'm fine during a thunderstorm. A surge protector will definitely help. Again, if you get a direct hit by a positive strike, it'll be too much amps for even that. So you are taking your chances. I guess at that point, if your judgment, if it's a milder thunderstorm, probably doesn't hurt to have a computer in a surge protector. If it's not, I'd say unplug it, absolutely. A surge protector, maybe, but again, you're still taking your chances. If it's a particularly strong thunderstorm, yeah, I would say the better chance is to unplug it. I mean, again, that's just my professional opinion or my personal opinion, but definitely don't, if there's no surge protector, definitely do not plug it in. Even taking a shower in a thunderstorm, there's a chance, although it's pretty remote, that the thunder lightning could actually work through the pipes, but again, that's pushing it. But probably best if it's a really bad storm to hold off in the shower and things like that, because it's just a lot of juice out there, and it can be deadly.
I had never heard that idea about the shower. Wow, yeah. The saying I've heard about lightning is that the number of seconds between thunder and lightning equals how many miles away it struck. Is that true?
Yeah, because sound, a standard atmosphere, give or take, travels about 600 miles an hour, give or take, which is 10 times faster than interstate speed. So that would equivalent to 5 to 6 seconds a mile. So the rule of thumb is 5 seconds. You hear thunder and wait 5 seconds. Now, if the air is a little colder, it might be a little faster and that kind of thing, but it's usually pretty close. So that's a pretty good indicator. You see the lightning. you count, and 5 seconds later, if you hear the thunder, it means it was a mile away. Obviously, if you hear if it's right there instantaneously, it was basically overhead or very close. But that is absolutely true. That's a very good rule to follow.
And I noticed recently a TV meteorologist referred to our muggy weather as air you can wear. Any survival or comfort tips for us, Hugh?
Yeah, well, it's just very humid. It's actually, believe it or not, humid air is lighter than dry air. That's why when you have these thunderstorms, the air is unstable because you get some drier air or loss or cooler air, and that can push the particles up quickly and produce the clouds and showers and thunderstorms. Just stay hydrated. I mean, with the humidity, and don't overdo it. And I mean, at least it's not super hot out, but we could actually get warmer as we get later in the week. But you just have to really be careful out there in the humidity, because it can be kind of nasty. And your body, when it's humid, you're sweating, but the sweat, which helps, when it evaporates, is what cools you, but it's not going to be able to evaporate too quickly. That's why you can get overheated with the high humidity.
And we're not the only place having bad weather. I heard something about the earliest hurricane ever to form off Cape Verde, but I thought there were tropical systems forming earlier this year. So what's going on?
Well, actually not this year, but you're right on two accounts. We've had tropical systems. We actually had one in January many years back, not that many years back, but a few years back. But what's very, very interesting is you are absolutely correct. You really don't get the Cape Verde season, the ones that form off of Africa, until usually late July into early August. And the reason why this is happening is that the Atlantic water temperatures are at record warmth off of Africa, about as warm as they've ever been this time of year. In fact, they're actually paralleling what they normally are in September when it's at its height. So it's a little scary that we're already this warm this early. And even with El Nino, which is definitely, I think the presence is there now. The good news is we had two of them actually that formed, and there was a possible third one, but I think the shear has taken care of them. There's a little more shear, which is increasing winds with a stronger subtropical jet, a little too strong for the hurricanes to do their twisting. They want a little shear. A little shear goes a long way, but when you get too much of it, of a good thing, it breaks them apart. It's like it breaks off their head, if you will. And that seemed to be what happened with Brett and Chris. Thank God, so we didn't get any. I was a little concerned that Chris could actually get injected into the trough that's giving us our unsettled weather, but that's not the case, thank goodness. But yeah, it's interesting that we're getting these Cape Verdes early.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we only have a minute left.
Running out of time.
So I think the weather forecast is rain, 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 rain.
Well, it's not going to be constant rain. What we're seeing is rounds of rain. We have this Monday night, and we're going to have it again probably tomorrow. The same thing afternoon, probably more coverage in the morning. A little less maybe Wednesday, but still there. And then finally, the trough lifts out Thursday. Not so bad, maybe more scattered. Maybe a dry day Friday, fingers crossed. But unfortunately, another one of these cutoff lows is coming on the weekend, so we'll probably get a resurge of showers and thunderstorms. But hopefully by the 4th, we'll be done with this. But yeah, fairly active week coming up, that's for sure. Some areas getting a lot more rain than others will be hit and miss. Some areas could get several inches. Other ones may not get much at all. We've already seen that in the last day or so.
And I am getting a signal that we are just about out of time. But as always, thank you, Hugh, for joining us for another discussion. And we look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that in Albany, state lawmakers have a good government rule mandating that the public gets 3 days to see the language in any bill before a vote. But New York also has another rule where the governor can create a, and I quote, message of necessity, end quote, to get around a 3-day rule. This year, Governor Kathy Hochul has issued 19 messages of necessity, according to the New York Public Interest Research Group. That is the most since then-Governor Andrew Cuomo issued 29 in 2011. Hochul used the maneuver to speed along the passage of the state budget, a now-stalled authorization of the Seneca Gaming Compact, and several labor agreements. With Democrats in control in Albany, Republicans oppose messages of necessity and have proposed a constitutional amendment to limit the use of messages of necessity for the 10 budget bill lawmakers must consider each year. But when Republican George Pataki was governor in the 1990s, he issued all sorts of messages of necessity, with 144 in 1996. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise that in 2021, Republicans and Democrats in Westerlo endorsed the same slate of candidates except for town justice. This year, every seat is contested. Democrats have endorsed Bill Morin, who owns Morin's Body Works, for supervisor, incumbent conservative Peter Mahan for town board, and Bo Lodendorf, an event planner and the planning board chair, for town board. Republicans nominated incumbent supervisor Matt Kurzak and Amy Burnside for town board, and William Hall, who owns Fresh Starts Family Farm in Westerlo and is on the planning board, for town board. Kurzak and Morin and planning board member Angela Kochner each tried to get the supervisor nomination from both parties. There was cross-party endorsement for incumbent town clerk Carla Weaver and for town highway superintendent Jody Ostrander. Voting takes place this year in late October and early November. And you can read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise. Doug LaRoche reports for the Columbia Paper that a dispute over storage facilities has delayed the New Lebanon Town Board from approving changes to its zoning law at its June 13th meeting. Supervisor Trista Hoteling was the only board member in favor of blocking any new storage facilities in New Lebanon, but allowing existing storage units to expand. Coon Storage on U.S. Route 20 wants to expand and was hoping Hodling's change would pass. But some board members said they thought the community did not want any new or expanded storage facilities. Now the board will consider more zoning changes at its July 11th meeting. Read more about this story in the Upstater. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm after noon. The temperature high will be near 78 degrees. On Tuesday night, more showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly before 2 a.m. Then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 5 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 64 degrees. And on Wednesday, showers and possibly a thunderstorm with a temperature high near 74 degrees. And on Wednesday night, the showers and thunderstorms continue, with likely showers and possible thunderstorms before 8 p.m., then a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly between 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Yeah. Why don't you give up crying?